Hello again, and welcome back to Pirate Radio. In this episode, I speak to a gentleman called Jack Harper, who runs his own fashion label called Eliza, but has worked in the past with Off-White, obviously that was founded by Virgil Abloh. He worked under Samuel Ross at A Cold War for a time, and we discussed that during the podcast. And he's also done work for the Design Museum in London on a sneaker exhibition called Sneaker Unboxed. And we discuss his education, his early influences, his influences that go into building Eliza and the multi-sensory experience that it is. And discuss art briefly and a few different things, really. I can't even remember all of them. But you're listening to it anyway, so you'll find out. But yeah, I hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side when I've stopped waffling. First of all, for the pleasure of... Oh, why do we always fuck this up? First of all, for the people that don't have the pleasure of knowing yourself, can you give them a bit of a rundown as to who you are and what you do?
Say less. So, my name is Jack Harper, and I am the creative director and founder of Eliza, which is a clothing and design and experience-based project in London. Sure, but speed.
That's nice, though. It's good. It's good. So, yeah, as I said, jumping back to when things might have first got started for yourself, can you remember when you first really got interested in the arts at all?
Like on a professional note, or just
Just in general. Is it something you've been interested in from sort of a young age?
Yeah, like from as a child, I was like really into it. I was super into, like, my original love was watching like Yu-Gi-Oh on like the weekend on was it Boomerang on like a Friday on Channel 5. And like, I used to, this council estate that I used to live on, one of my best friends actually lived like right next to me, and he was like a few years older. And he was always into drawing, like anime and making these like comic books, and that was such like amazing like entry point to you know to like drawing and like doing something more than just a doodle. That was like a really nice entry point to my interest in the art. And then obviously, I think there were like a multitude of touch points as I got older. When I was in school, like I was more into like painting, like my I used to like love like Bridget Riley optical illusion art. That was a massive phase that I went through. And used to sell t-shirts at school, because two of my when I used to live in Brighton, there was a like a massive skate scene. So there was like a massive surge in streetwear that came with that, from like the 100 Supreme. You know, I can name like loads of brands. And then like my friends one time wanted to like start a brand, but they were the kind of fuckers that would like never follow through with it. So I just ended up making the designs and then sell them at school and stuff. And yeah, like I think like a massive moment where I like acknowledged like graphic design was when the Hope poster by Shepherd Fairley came out. So like when I was looking at doing my GCSEs, there's usually like a show day where like you see all the like choices you can pick from. And I just like always remember looking at that poster being really fascinated by it, but I was like confused why it was in this like field of graphic design and that wasn't just art. And that really like touched, you know, I was just really tapped into that. And yeah, that's that, I could guess in short, is like where my like love for all of that came from.
Would you personally put graphic design in the art field?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I find that graphic design as a practice is like more or less a service, but you know, like what's the difference between an artist and a designer using Adobe Illustrator or Photoshop? Like as a practice, it's not, there's not too many differences, but I definitely see that like graphic design is like there to serve, rather than there to like be a form of like freedom and expression, you know?
I think it can as well, though. You can definitely get sort of graphic artists. There was a guy I was looking at yesterday who does, I can't remember his name for the life of me, but it's in this like contemporary art exhibition thing, and he's selling these paintings where it's just a rainbow, and the title of the painting is just the steps that he took in Photoshop to make the print, and it's selling for like 200 grand a piece, but it's just like click on X, Y, and Z. It's got that X, Y, Z coordinates, and then it's telling you to drag. It's giving you the instructions on how to make the print. It's really strange, but it's like it's selling for loads.
Key word though to the point is you saying graphic art, not graphic design. So that is what I would say is like the difference ultimately. Because like I think like I always, it's quite a corny reference, but like I always remember Kanye West in like 2016, I think, doing this interview with Zane Lowe, and he goes on to say how like art is to be free and design is to fix. And you know, if we were to like put the comparisons between like what graphic art is and graphic design is, you know, like you don't go to a graphic artist to design a logo, like you go to a graphic designer, like because they're just kind of, it's definitely like a mindset approach in the tools that you use. So I guess that is like fun when you like really like boil it down to like the difference. That is what I perceive the difference to be. Like I'm not like, I'm always, don't get me wrong, like I'm here for expressing myself, but I don't like sit here on a daily and use my imagination all the time. Like I always kind of really have a desire to like solve problems and change things. And like maybe like graphic design like does inform that from, you know, like when I do fashion design, when I do like installations and pop-ups, it's more to like inform and change something than just like creating like an imaginary world. You know, it's like the difference between like a documentary and a film. Like I've always like looked at everything from more of a documentary format. I would just, if I was to ever go into filming or directing, I would do a documentary film versus a film. Like even the way that I shoot is more of a documentary format versus it being like a, you know, like high-end conceptual fashion shoot. Sorry if that's a bit of a tangent.
No, you're make go as many tangents as you want, honestly. Jumping back though to your studies, and obviously you, from what I understand, you did study graphic design at university. Did you have any real seminal moments when you were studying that sort of led you to this sort of multifaceted path that you're on now?
To be fair, no. It actually came probably a bit earlier when I was at college, because when I was at college, like I didn't do A-levels, I did a BTEC in visual arts and design. So imagine like, you know, A-levels, you would typically do three or four subjects in completely different fields, whereas like, I just did one thing, and the modules were incredibly different within doing that course, whether it was like photography one day to painting the next day to sculpture, this, that, the other. I like really got a breadth of, you know, like the full range of arts and design's potential. And I think I was very curiously, my curiosity really led my interest. And when I ended up going to do graphic design communication at university, you kind of have this perception that graphic design is just sitting down at a laptop doing the same thing, and it really isn't. There is such like multitude of things that you can do within the umbrella of what graphic design is. And I learned photography, I learned Photoshop, I learned designing clothes, I learned print. There are just so many avenues you can go down that graphic design as a practice is somewhat multifaceted, but obviously, you know, that's relative to like the course that you choose and the university that you choose. And I think I was just quite lucky to pick a course that was, you know, it somewhat fulfilled my curiosity. Like we never had to specialize immediately. That was for me the biggest plus about it, and yeah, that's what I think. Like I've always been not seeing my practice as multidisciplinary, you know, like they're just all vessels at the end of the day. And what I got taught is that the idea comes first, you know, so you have an idea, but if you have a range of ways that you can vessel the idea, then there is just way more potential in the long run. Whereas if you're like a specialist in, say, typography, your ideas can only be like limited within the vessel of typography, which isn't very like, in my opinion, at least very revolutionary. Like it's just pointless restriction, but you know, like it's each to their own. Like some people love the obsession and dedication to one thing, where I've just never really been like that. I'm more of a generalist and my practice continues to be that.
Would you say that if somebody came to you and a younger designer came to you and asked you to go to university, do you think you'd give them the advice as to go to university and get the education then?
Yeah, I'm very pro education, because I don't, to be honest, like, I think the biggest take from education in university is the people that you meet, and I think that you need to be challenged by not only the course but the people that you're around, because I don't know, depending on like where you're from and so on and so forth, like, I think, yeah, you maybe could learn everything on YouTube and, you know, like, not amass a certain amount of debt, but I do think that what you get in exchange is like so much greater, but you just have to somewhat be open to it. And that is what separates certain people. And like, for me, you know, like, the greatest thing that I learned was meeting loads of people, and it really like changed my, well, I wouldn't even say changed, it evolved my view on the world and like what the world looks like beyond my own eyes, because you just had so many people from different cultures being in like one place. And, you know, even to this day, I've only really experienced that going to like Paris Fashion Week. But besides that, university has only really been the place where that has happened. And I'm very, you know, I look back at that with a lot of gratitude, and I'm extremely grateful for it. And that's an experience that I would love everyone to have. And I think that does like make better, you know, makes you into a better person.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. The next question I've wrote is just, do you have an interest in philosophy? Can't say the word philosophy. I'll get there eventually. Do you have an interest in philosophy? But you did mention it, I think you did touch on it in the WMTV interview that you do. So do you have any philosophers that you're interested in specifically?
It's kind of I'm at like a weird one at the minute, because like philosophy is so in depth. Like, I'm in this place where there are so many ways to tap into philosophy that it's actually kind of hard to like start somewhere. Like, I'm guessing, you know, I look into like stoicism a lot, just because that kind of matches like the way I am as a person, which is, you know, I guess like an interest that I'm in at the minute is, you know, like old, you know, like Greek philosophy, you know, so like Plato, Socrates and so on, because that just is like somewhat the origin of, you know, like philosophy that still like applies to today. And then I guess like looking more forward, I'm really into looking at like ways the world can govern itself. So, you know, capitalism, communism, socialism, Marxism, they're more like ideological drives to like rule society and run society, but at the core of it does come from like a philosophy, because you have to have reason, and philosophy isn't this like black and white right or wrong topic. It's actually something way more layered, and I look into that all the time. It's stuff I could listen to every day and, you know, like think about it. But I kind of, my interest in philosophy is like very matched with psychology, just because the kind of person that I am is very, you know, I'm very driven by reason, but I also have a level of logic. Like, I don't really like research into philosophy in search for the things that I already know, where like clinical psychology is very driven by like objective facts. It's not really about finding the answers that you want. And so, yeah, I think those topics in a time in the world right now which is extremely polarizing is actually a very interesting time to be looking into it. I don't really think philosophy is actually in the foreground as it should be, in my opinion. I think the world needs a lot more like belief and questioning and faith and so on and so forth.
In the WMTV interview that I've touched on, you touched on the fact that after you finished university, you struggle with finding your pace in the industry a little bit. Do you have any advice for people that may be feeling like that after graduation at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, like, be patient for what you want and it will come to you, but it will only come to you if you are persistent with the work that you're doing and the character that you put forward. And it's hard. Like, a good friend of mine's actually just graduated, and they graduated like earlier this year, but like they've only just got the job that they wanted. But it took like 6-7 months of like persistence and like constant fleshing it out to, you know, get to that point. And I think like if you're in a position where you can do that, then I think you should do it. Don't compromise what you want, because I do believe the world will deliver. That's what I think. But like if I could give like a more in-depth answer, the experience that I went through was I graduated from university and my course was like very driven towards like advertising and agencies, and I just knew that wasn't really where I wanted to go in. I definitely did want to go into fashion at some point, but you know, there isn't like many windows that are open at any given point. They don't con too often, and there were like a few things that I was praying at, and you know, between graduating and getting the job that I got, I was working in a pub for like 6 months, and then I was doing like an internship at my friend's, at like a studio where like one of my good friends was working at, and you know, like saw an Instagram post and like just took the opportunity, and then that was like my job for the next two. That was like my dream, like that was my dream, that's what I wanted. But some people do expect it to come like straight away, and I think this is quite naive. But what I did in between like those 7 months is like, even though I was working in a pub, like I was constantly shooting, I was like always doing like these projects with people, and that always like kept me extremely like motivated. And that it's a sacrificial thing. Like when you know you want to do something, you just got to kind of like put your life and commit to it, really. That is like the risk.
Yeah, I think I'm a big advocate for kind of just doing, even when I was at university, I was doing a lot of side projects, like this podcast, I did a book and things like that. I think doing a lot of stuff on your own time, if you've got the time, obviously, if you haven't, if you're working to fund your education, fair enough.
Well, no, it's brilliant. Yeah, man, it's brilliant that you're doing this, and that's why, like, I want to be on it, is like, you need those things. Like, it's actually incredible how, like, those things inform the stuff that you do in your future. Like, I can tell you that one of the reasons I got like my job at A Cold Wall was because I did two music videos for someone that they knew, and they were completely self-initiated, and that was like that had like nothing to do with my education, you know. And I like, what if I didn't? What if I was just someone that when they left university just went home and did fuck all? You know, that could have cost me like not getting that job. And it's those small things. It's just like those small little things that could make a massive difference.
And a lot of them, I don't think, sometimes it might be you're not even making any money off of it or anything like that. It might be something you're doing self-initiated and stuff like that, but it can definitely, the little things can always lead on. You know, I had a job at a creative agency called The Chase in Manchester briefly, which was just solely off of the back of this podcast. It had nothing to do with my university work. They hired me solely off of this. So it's like, I think, if personally, I think just chasing all, you know, your side hustle type things, they can often be the thing that really propel you into agencies or into, you know, creative worlds and things like that. So yeah, as you mentioned, you graduated and you started working at A Cold Wall. At this point, do you think that you were sold, that you were sold on the fact that you were going to go into the fashion realm from then on?
No, I was kind of like open to like a few things that was happening. I'm really into like book design and, you know, like that whole thing, like printing and stuff. And so I was like looking at a few opportunities there, but they just kind of like never came up. Like, I'm a massive fan of a company called OKRM that do like, they're actually designed one of Virgil's books. They do a lot of like stuff in the fashion industry, but they also do stuff out of it, but it's just like centered around more like editorial design and bookmaking. And I've always like had a love for that. That's why I make books now and will continue to do so. So I was like, I think my passion was more driven towards like the concepts and, you know, like what purpose does it serve. And you know, to me, like, even though they were kind of like different in practice, A Cold Wall and OKRM were like very similar in terms of like what it's striving to do, and I was like very impartial to that. But like, A Cold Wall presented an opportunity, and that was like what I ended up doing. And that was the greatest thing that I did.
Do you, you obviously touched on working with Virgil and Samuel. Do you have any significant memories from this time at all? Any gems that you can remember?
It's kind of interesting. Like if I was to like talk about them collectively, like I've spoke to Virgil like a few times. So I did like a project with him and my mate where we shot this like rubber dunk campaign. And the whole like concept was around the fact that skating was in the Olympics for the first time, and my mate was a skater, and he like sent us this like javelin and these hurdles that like my boy had to skate over, which was quite fun. But like, I guess like the juxtaposition between like Sam and Samuel and Virgil was like Virgil was so like he just lets you do it, and he's kind of like the way he talks was just so like, you know, like enthusiastic, like a teenager. It was very loose, which was such a difference between working with Sam, who's like very meticulous, and you know, like, mate, this guy would like speak to me till like 2 a.m. like trying to get like an image photoshopped perfectly, and it was exhausting at times, but it also like informed me, like it actually got like, it's why like I can do things to such a like gruelingly high levels, because he taught me in that way. But I always just like find it hilarious how like they ever worked with each other, just because like the way they pursue their practice is so fucking different. But their like values are the same. It's just the way that they express it is like quite different from like a internal level. But like both experiences I'm like incredibly like grateful for, and I like loved working with them. I guess like when you like work with people like that as well, you know, like, I also work with like currently I do like some freelance for Clint at Cortez. Like the one thing I can just say is like it's not a coincidence that these lot were like are in the positions that they're in, you know. It's like it like really isn't that deep. Like it just comes down to like pure love and pure obsession with what you do, and they put in hours that I know most people can't. Like when I say most, I mean like 99.9% of people can't do. So I like definitely like take inspiration from that, you know. Like I have no excuses. It's as simple as that.
What are your you touched on Cortez, what are your thoughts on the overall kind of the marketing and things that go into that?
Oh, Clint's the best at marketing I've ever like seen. Definitely, like he's so tapped in. You know, like I think it depends like in what angle are you asking me from it. Like if you're asking me from it from the standpoint of someone that also like runs a brand or clothing project, however you want to define it, like I would say that his marketing ideals aren't for everyone, and it's very like tailored towards him. But that's kind of like the impressive thing about it, is that his whole like Cortez's brand is like so tailored around Clint as a person that it's like really you just can't replicate that. Like it wouldn't make sense for me to do like 99p cargos as a drop, but it makes a lot of sense for him because of like the crowd that he draws and what it is that he represents. And yeah, I think like, you know, like when I've talked about it with like people close and stuff, like I've, you know, there's definitely like a dual discussion there. Like it's not just, you know, like patriotically positive. Like I do sometimes think, oh, okay, like with the cargo thing, does that influence like fast fashion or does that not? And I would say no, it doesn't. But it's like I think the greatest thing about what Clint does is that it makes people like myself talk about it. And when you really boil it down, like what he's doing is very inspirational. That's what I think. But it's very easy to hate on it. You know, that's not me saying it, but like I know a lot of people that do hate on it, but there's actually no reason why.
Jumping back to when you were working at A Cold Wall, can you remember at what point you sort of began to think about and decide and starting your own label?
So I actually had my idea since the end of university, so I kind of like held on to the idea for quite a few years, but I just didn't think it was like the right time, and I just wanted to learn a lot more before I like dived into doing something like what I did. And that was just like based off of me understanding that I had quite like a limited knowledge, and there was just I just like very front with I want to like see if I can achieve it with someone else before I like work on my own thing, and that's just like the route that I ended up going down. And I kind of like look back at it and think it's really interesting. Like I don't know how I would have pursued Eliza when I was 20. Like I just didn't know anything. Like I really didn't. I was too nervous to even like print t-shirts like at a factory. And like now I like know how to do cut and sew and like run everything from like a business level, like understand like what it means to make a collection and the marketing and blah blah blah. Like I just know how I understand it all because I worked in it, and like I just think that's so important to like have that experience. So yeah, I would advise everyone to intern or get a job in industry of their interest before they start doing what it is that they're doing. But it depends, you know, like it's that's just me and my character. You know, like going back to Clint, like Clint had a brand before called Cade, but like he didn't necessarily have like experience working in another brand that wasn't his own. He just like did it himself, and it's just each to their own. But I personally would always advise to like, you know, try and work with other people first.
I ask this to every guest now, and it's kind of like a recurring segment, but it's essentially the idea of, I call it the Hall of Fame. And if I was to run up to you in the street and say, can you give me one thing that I'll go away and research that has been really the heartbeat of your own career? And it can be anything. It can be a book, a movie, a painting, a song, you know, something that's been kind of the most inspirational thing that you've ever come across. It might be a person, you know. What do you think that would be for yourself?
That's so tough.
That's a mad question, I know, by the way.
Because I could like say, because I like look back, and I can like say a few things that have definitely like influenced me, like more than anything. I'm gonna say two things.
Yeah, that's fine.
One is Adam Curtis, Hype Normalization. Just because I think that is the most twisted, most insightful. I would happily say that documentary and him as a person changed my life, just because of like the way he like ties everything together and the in-depthness to it. Like I love the fact that we don't know everything, and like how everything has like a chain response to one another, and yeah, I think that's great. So I'd highly recommend that. My other thing is, I would like, my biggest inspiration in more like the first half of my life is Keith Haring, just because he showed me that it wasn't about how good you are at something, it was about whether you enjoyed it. And like something that I like really felt in touch with, so that I have two younger sisters who are half my age, and when I used to like paint and stuff, I would like make sure that like my sisters were able to paint it as well. And so Keith Haring like showed me the importance of accessibility and connection through being able to like draw it as well. And so things that he was able to do, like such a massive work and tap into so many places, that just always like drew as like an inspiration to me, and you know, for like work ethic, work accessibility, education. Yeah, that's my favorite artist of all time.
You touched on Joseph Albers when you did the other interview as well. Have you got any? Should touch on sort of the inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I like Joseph Albers would probably be like my third choice. Just because, like, I think, well, first off, like Joseph Albers was a teacher at the Bauhaus School of Design, and what he showed me is the power of education through the medium of art, which kind of like even puts the question whether it's art or not. Like, and I think like I think right now in the world, whether it's in like the field of art and design, like I do think there is this lack of education through it. Like, there aren't, you can definitely create an argument that there are in some places, but like the kind of education that there is in the like art and design world is like very, you know, of protest, of like change, where I guess Joseph Albers was just like a bit more, you know, like on the side academic in general. And, you know, he with that being said, it shows that it only took like 3 squares on a painting to be able to like inform a really like holistic message. And that kind of thing like definitely has influenced me. Like, I don't feel the need to like overdo things, because if I overdo a garment, then it like loses the holistic idea of the meaning behind it. And so for me, the avant-garde is the idea, and what it is that I'm talking about, the way I present it, is like somewhat digestible and understandable. And I look at Joseph Albers in that same way. And for me, that, you know, draws to be a very big inspiration.
Do you ever struggle? I struggle with a lot, and especially when I was in third year, because I did a clothing project then. It was called Context, and it was essentially the idea of taking visual elements from, like, the first collection that I did was on the construction industry. So I took the visual elements of the construction industry and put it on clothes. So then as people wore them in different places, the context would change with it, and you'd get sort of a one of one, so to speak. Nothing would be the same because it would have changed things up. And I struggled a lot with just trying to communicate that to other people who wouldn't understand it. Do you ever get it where you kind of, you can't communicate an idea? Like, it's in your head and it's there, but it's just kind of like trying to get it out.
To an extent, I have had that problem before, but, you know, like, what's the solution there? Like, is the solution to, like, reduce the idea completely so your audience understands it? Or is it about, like, improving your communication so your audience will understand it? And then also, you know, your audience has to be willing to listen to get it. Do you know what I'm saying? And there's times where I, like, talk to my shit and people, like, you know, in the WMTV interview, like, my man was saying, I've never known someone to go so in depth to what is like fundamentally a hoodie or a t-shirt. And I'm like, because there is so much to talk about. Like, I see the world as like a really mundane place. And, you know, like, life without depth is meaningless and shallow, you know? And I like see that same thing in what in like my craft is like, if my work's meaningless, it's just shallow and pointless. And I can't justify its existence otherwise. So I think that you know, in some places, like, if what you did like end up being a brand, like, you'd understand that there are so many ways to like convey the idea. Like, it wouldn't just be through clothing. It would be through the fashion shoot. It would be through the captions. It would be through the pop-ups. It would be through the experiences. Like, you just can't condense it all into one thing. And like, I think obviously, like, with the format of university, you've got to like do a blog, put everything into like one project. It's just like a lot, you know? And so I wouldn't worry about it. I'm not gonna lie, when I was at university, I'm 26 now, I graduated at 20. I was someone that said like a lot. I would talk too quickly, where now I take my time with what I say and try my best to figure it out. You know, inevitably, like, when you're in a contextual practice, you do have to think about it a lot. Like, I think about things every day from a contextual standpoint, so when moments like this do present itself, I'm able to talk about it. And, you know, I saw something really silly about a year ago, but it's always stuck with me. And it was talking about, at what age do people peak in their craft? So, like, what's the peak age for a musician? What's the peak age for a philosopher? What's the peak age for an artist? And you find that they actually change a lot. So, like, the peak age for an artist is like 23, 24. Like, it's a lot rarer to find a new musician that like has their debut at like 35 years old. It just doesn't work like that. But then philosophy, the average age of like being a top philosopher is your mid-40s, because in order to understand philosophy, you like need to live life to be able to like wrap your head around it. And that's also a very important thing, is just like letting time do the work. And I'm in no way like a philosopher, but I'm interested in it, and I would probably aspire to go down that line in the future via education, via lecturing. But I need to have lived a life before I can be able to like inform people the rights and wrongs, you know. So I think like the fact that you go through the struggle is great, because you're in that process right now where you're, imagine like your life being like a block of marble, and like the end point is this like beautiful sculpture, you know. Inevitably, like, it takes time, and like you have to go through, like, you gotta go and keep hitting it so it refines itself, and that is like what you're going through, you know. And it's crazy how much can change within like 2 years. And so I would say just like keep doing it, but understand like it's a trial and error, and you've just gotta like improve it and become closer with your audience. Look, the matter of fact is not everyone's gonna be into it. That's just, no, you know, it would be boring otherwise, you know. Like, it's just that not everyone likes the challenge. Some people don't have that relationship with clothing, unfortunately. But you know, like, I believe that will change.
Do you think that will become more of that? Do you think it become the default more, that they'll have kind of, you'll have brands with kind of the deeper meaning to them, as opposed to, you know, like a Primark where you just go in and buy a t-shirt?
Yes, but I also, it's a tough one as well, because like, I was actually having this conversation the other week where it's relative to the position that you're in. Like, if you're like someone from like a really like low income family and like has no money, you know, Primark might be the only place that one can consume that product. You know, it's tough to be able to like talk too hard about the moral of it. But like, if you're in a position where you can, like, you know, if I was to like buy Primark now, I could buy a shit ton of it. But it doesn't mean I should. You know, I think it's more like that's where the problem is. It's like knowing when to like draw the line of consumption. And I don't think like the solution is via, I don't think the solution is necessarily via not buying products. I think it's about buying meaningful products. And because when you buy meaningful products, it's very like hard to replace it. It's very hard to buy a mass of it because you value it so much. You know, like, since I've like done my projects, like I buy less products. My life is like very holistically simple, and I'm a lot happier because of it.
I know this is going on a massive tangent now. If you need to dip or anything, if you're busy, I completely understand. But I was going to say, what are your thoughts on kind of digital fashion?
What, like the kind of like NFT 3D world and stuff, Web3?
Yeah. The thing I was looking into it a lot when I was at uni. Well, I'm still at uni, but when I was on my undergrad, and it was kind of this thing, because we're in the ultimate goal, I think, for it all. And I spoke to a guy that runs a digital fashion label. I forgot what it's called, but the ultimate goal with it all is eventually they think that you will have you'll have a metaverse, won't you? That people will go into to work, to socialize and things like that. And you obviously need clothes for that. So then they'd be making completely digital clothes. But at the moment, because it's kind of that sort of the bleeding edge, so to speak, it's not sort of, you know, your average thing that the average consumer would have. They do a thing at the moment where you send them a photo of yourself, and then what you do is you use a program called Clo3D to render the clothes, and it looks, you can get it to look like lifelike, essentially. It can match the lighting and the images that you've sent and things like that. And they put the clothes on you in the photo. So it's like, it's half real, half digital, if that makes sense. But yeah, have you got any thoughts on that? Or have you got any thoughts on, you know, the NFT space or anything like that?
It's kind of funny, like, so like, I've been to Los Angeles twice this year, and over there, they're very progressive with it. Like, it's something that they are pushing quite hard. But like, there was the whole like crypto financial crash pre-September. And in September, when I went, the whole like conversation changed because money ain't there anymore. And so for me, it just like really boils down to making money. And I find that right now, like that whole realm is just like a bit too shallow for there to like have any meaning. On my personal opinion, like not everyone in the world even has access to like a bathroom, you know, like there are like people in the world that don't even like have basic amenities. So I think that if it was gonna go down that space where like I'm on a headset every day, like socializing, blah blah blah, maybe we'll go down that space, but like this thing hasn't been any different, you know, like on Xbox 360 you were able to like purchase clothes for your avatar, but it was like it was just like more novelty. It wasn't a necessity. Do you know what I'm saying? Like I couldn't give a fuck if I was in the metaverse, like, I couldn't really give a fuck what I'd wear, because me personally, like I'm just aware of who I like. Me as a person matters in real life. And so like, why am I going to just spend more money on something that I can't even like hold? It's just a bit ridiculous for me. I just think a lot of it's bullshit, and it's not a coincidence that like NFTs became a massive thing in a time where the world was crashing due to the pandemic. So it was just like all of a sudden a panic of, okay, fuck, like how do we make money, this, that, the other, and like boom, a whole industry is like blown up because they needed it. And yeah, I think when people talk to me about it, like I'm just naturally very skeptic about it. It's not something that I've been asked to do things in like the NFT space, and I just like have no reason to. Like I'm happy what I'm doing. Like the basic something that's like really tight, this quote is like the basic human need is a sense of belonging. And so if I personally already have a sense of belonging in like Web 2 and the real world, why would I need to go elsewhere? That's just kind of like my whole point of view of it. But like we'll see what happens in it. Like I just see it as a bit of a gimmick, like none of us go to the cinema anymore and watch 3D films. Like it's just an equivalent, in my opinion, you know. But like, you know, I definitely see like I see like the Web3 space as like a great place for like other things, like education. I definitely see great potential there. I see great potential in, you know, like hosting art spaces for, you know, like 3D and virtual work. I like see that, but I don't see the value in it in like the monetary sense. Like I think that is just like straight bullshit capitalism that like does nothing.
That's good. I like the answer. Jumping backwards now, because it's a bit of a tangent, back to Eliza. You're obviously now more than a graphic designer, a lot more than a graphic designer, but would you still call yourself a graphic designer? And does graphic design play a role in your day-to-day activities at all?
Yeah, I mean, before I got into school, I was editing photos. But besides, you know, so like, there's definitely like a practice in my day-to-day that's 100% graphic design. But yeah, like I don't really think about it anymore, to be honest with you. I find if people want a service from me, it like tends to be like quite a few things, and it just, you know, like sometimes it falls under the category of graphic design, sometimes it falls under the category of like consulting, business, photography, creative direction. It's, you know, I kind of more identify with what it is that I care about versus what it is that I do. Like what it is that I do is just like a tool to make people feel comfortable, you know. But it's just like, you know, like I struggle to have like a website of my own because I just like don't really know how to articulate all my ideas into one place without confusing someone. Yeah, that's what I think.
I saw recently in a tweet that you mentioned that all the collections for Eliza are going to be referred to as case studies, and I really, really love that idea. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yes. So I kind of like want to withdraw the idea that Eliza is like solely this like fashion project and brand. Like I for me, it is a facility to research and to study things such as like individual freedom, human behavior, psychology, perspectives, opinions. And I just think by like confining it as like a look, as a fashion brand, it restricts the full potential and the holistic idea of what it is in the first place. And I think when you, a friend said this to me, and it was like a great way to put it in short, which was, you know, seasons come and go, but case studies people always look back on. You know, we always look back at books and for research purposes. And that is like the relationship I'd like people to have with Eliza, because actually what we do has a lot of thought and meaning behind it and does talk about certain things. And yeah, we just use clothing and other things as a facility of topic. So that for me is why that it's going to be referred to as case studies instead of seasons.
Eliza is referred to as a multi-sensory experience on everywhere from its Instagram to its website. Could you touch a little bit on what that means for Eliza and how was that executed?
Cool. So it is actually a good question, like pre the last one. So going on saying that it's just like a lot more than just like a vessel in fashion. Eliza can be experienced in so many ways because of the ethos that it has, you know. So, okay, like, what is it like to wear Eliza? What is it like to feel Eliza? What is it like to hear Eliza? There are like so many ways to convey it, because ultimately, like, as it's a case study, we are very, you know, myself and Nosa, my business partner, like, we're very articulate. There's a lot to talk about, which is quite dense for some people. You know, like, it isn't just that. Like, sometimes we want people to be there and just feel it, you know? And I believe that that is where its full potential can really fulfill itself. You know, Nosa's a DJ and has done many shows, and I've done a lot of like installations before within like my last job and stuff. And so it was just like a great way to like come together and like collectively identify with it and host a really great experience for people that are interested. So I guess that is kind of like what I mean by like multi-sensory. It's like, it's not just to be seen or to be worn, it's, and to be felt, it's like to be heard as well. And it's we can like facilitate all those experiences.
I don't want to pry into stuff that you might not be able to talk about, but do you have any ideas as for what that might look like going forward?
We're currently like working on our second collection, which is, we're like aiming for February, but we're not personally like too pressed on it for February. Like, February is ideal on the fashion calendar, but there's also the rebellious side of me that doesn't give a fuck when I release it. It's when I want. And we're going to try and do a showroom in April in Tokyo instead of doing Paris, which is quite left, which is quite left of us, but it's like it's a culture and an industry that myself and Mosa love, and we have since we were kids. So we feel naturally more tapped into that culture than we are into like Western fashion culture. There's one thing I can't say, but like, we're looking to do a music partnership like event in February as well with like a really like leading group, and we're just excited for that to potentially follow through. So that would be a music event with DJs and performers, but it will also be an installation and like potentially a collaboration. So yeah, a lot of things.
Lastly, to begin, just a final question, and it's quite a big one, but if you could go back in time to when you first got started in all of this, before everything, and give yourself one piece of advice, knowing what you know now, what do you think it would be?
If I look back, I would have probably said like leave London, just because like the world's a lot bigger than London, and like I think because I like have a business at like a bigger point, it's like harder to leave, because like right now I'm in my studio, so I can't just like pack my bags and go because I've got so much shit with me. So I guess like I guess be more free before you start doing it, but I. You know, it's a double-edged sword, because ironically I travel more because I've got this, so it's a really like strange one. But I, you know, like when I did it then, I like I'm a bit more streamlined with my way of thinking, a lot more mature. I'm a lot more like at peace with the process, where back then I was like a lot tighter with it. And I don't think that was necessary.
Sounds. And then lastly, where can people find yourself online?
So I have mainly I use Instagram. So Jack Harper_4x, and that's my Instagram. And then Eliza, which is AELIZA, that's it. That's on Instagram as well. And we've got Eliza.com. The most interesting point that I say, but I keep it very private, is we have a burner account called Eliza.truth, which is effectively the whole process of Eliza from start to finish. And that's something we like hope to make public in years to come. But that is effectively like our blog, which we hope to like teach people when like things go wrong, things go right, you know, just to make people feel closer to it and make it feel more relatable. Like the one thing I definitely don't want to do with this is that if it does get bigger, is to not alienate people nor make people feel distant. I want people to like look at it, like they can look at themselves in the mirror, you know.
Hello again. I have now stopped waffling, so I'm going to carry on waffling. I hope you enjoyed that. It was really insightful for myself. Hopefully you got something from it. I'm sure you did. Yeah, give Jack a follow. If you don't follow Eliza, go and give it a follow. It's really lovely. The messages behind the garments are really lovely and well thought out. And it's a project which is sort of still in the early works, in its infancy. But it will do, you know, I can imagine it becoming a really big label at some point. If you want to follow myself online, as ever, I'm Parity Material. My website is paratymaterial.co.uk. It's just a collection of my work. I don't know why you'd go and look at it if you listen to this. I don't even know why I plug it, to be honest with you. But yeah, thank you for listening. And I shall, whatever I do at you, speak at you next time. Bye.